its current state. On WKAR at the top of our program today, back on February 21st, a campus-wide email was sent out by Paulette Granberry Russell at Michigan State University. She's the university's Title IX coordinator and director of its Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives. In it, she stated that the university was, quote, collaborating, unquote, with the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. It was later revealed by local news outlets that MSU was, in fact, under a federal investigation for its policies and response to sexual assault claims. The investigation stems from at least two complaints filed with the Office of Civil Rights, one of which is from a 2010 incident involving two members of the men's basketball team. In the police report of this incident, one of the alleged suspects, who were never publicly identified, corroborated many of the details in the victim's statement and expressed an interest in apologizing to the victim a second time the following day. The two players were never charged by the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office. With us now by phone to give us a sense of how all this might play out is Aaron Basuvas. Aaron's a professor at Western New England University School of Law and the director of its Center for Gender and Sexuality Studies. Aaron's also the co-founder and co-contributor to the Title IX blog, which tracks news and other developments around the federal statute that prohibits discrimination based on sex in federally funded schools. Welcome to Current State, Aaron.
Good morning, Mark.
Tell us, so the OCR was on the MSU campus a few weeks ago. Just in general terms, describe the process when the OCR makes a visit like this.
Yeah, well, the Office for Civil Rights, part of the Department of Education, has enforcement authority under Title IX, and part of its role is to receive complaints that might be filed by members of the public or people who think they know about potential violations that have occurred in a college, university, or another type of school. They have the opportunity to follow up on complaints that they think are worthy of investigation. And can show up in person and conduct interviews and review policies, ultimately to the possibility of leading to some kind of finding of a potential violation of Title IX. That in itself can then produce a theoretical penalty, which is the loss of federal funding. Because ultimately what the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights is concerned about is making sure that taxpayer dollars aren't being spent on institutions that are committing acts of discrimination and other violations of civil rights.
Why do you use the word theoretical there, though?
Yes, because it's a penalty that in all of Title IX's history has never actually been exacted on an institution that's been found in violation of civil rights. Instead, it operates kind of as a hammer in the air, right? It's the leverage that OCR uses to get institutions that are in violation to agree voluntarily to clean up their act.
What are the potential ramifications, though? Could include what?
The ultimate potential ramifications, as I said, is the loss of federal funding, which would affect every aspect of the university that, whether it's receiving research grants or students on federal financial aid. And that's not a realistic possibility, given, as I said, that it's never occurred. More likely, an agreement to remedy any violations that OCR might find. And such an agreement could require Michigan State to work on revisions to its policies and practices around sexual assault, to improve the way in which students understand how that process works, to do a better job tracking complaints about sexual assault that university officials might receive, to increase training for employees and to raise awareness among students about sexual assault prevention, to coordinate better with local law enforcement. And all of these efforts could be potentially subject to ongoing monitoring by the Office for Civil Rights.
How prevalent are these OCR investigations? Are they becoming more common, becoming less common? What?
Becoming more common, for sure. In the last year, on the Title IX blog, we've tracked about two dozen administrative complaints or lawsuits filed by students charging that a college or university was somehow dismissive of a reported sexual assault or multiple reported sexual assaults. And this has definitely been an uptick in these types of complaints and lawsuits. And you know, we could get into some of the background or reasons why that might be the case if you'd like, or
I can
say more.
Let's revisit something that happened here 3 years ago now, going on 3 years, the OCR's so-called Dear Colleague letter. This had quite an impact. What did the Dear Colleague letter say and do?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go anyway, to explain the context of the uptick in enforcement in this area of law. So in 2011, the Department of Education was becoming aware of a lot of, you know, various examples of mischief, for lack of a better word, that college and university officials were committing as ways to avoid dealing with prevention and response to issues of sexual assault on campus. And the agency realized that part of the problem seemed to be that institutions weren't aware of exactly how far their obligations to protect students' civil rights extend in this area. And so they issued this clarifying letter that really spells out in detail that had not yet been expressed exactly how universities and colleges are supposed to react when they receive a complaint about sexual assault.
And we want to make clear that the Dear Colleague letter went out to all Title IX schools, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
MSU responded to the Dear Colleague letter with a strict sexual assault reporting policy. But some people we've spoken to say that that actually has more of a chilling effect, because it could silence victims who don't want their incident reported, and it's really an imperfect response in some ways. Could you talk to us about, has that been a common problem across the landscape?
Sure. Well, I mean, first let me put that reporting in context, right? So you're talking about the kind of reporting that occurs if, say, a student who has experienced, survived, or been victimized by sexual assault goes to talk to, say, a trusted professor or a trusted staff member on campus and says, look, I need to tell you something. This terrible thing happened. And then that university official, has a choice to make about whether to sit on that information and do nothing, or whether to report it up the chain in some form to somebody who can actually take action and respond to what has happened. And that is something that, I mean, I think what the policy at Michigan State and what the Dear Colleague letter is trying to encourage is to remove that level of choice so that universities don't find themselves in the position of not understanding the depth of the problems that are existing, you know, at their own campuses. It prevents the sort of, you know, what a lawyer might call willful blindness, ignoring problems that are going on by saying, well, I had no idea that was happening, right, because nobody ever reported it up the chain. Obviously, if that reporting isn't handled in a sensitive way and isn't handled sensitive to the needs of the student who is making that report, it could potentially have a chilling effect, like you're saying. But the Title IX coordinators that I know and the people who I've talked to who are on the front lines of this issue, many of whom are really confident in their ability to empower a student in that position to make autonomous and independent choices about whether they want to report that information, knowing that somebody is going to be obligated to report it. And that can be reassurance that any report that is made to the university is only going to be made to somebody who absolutely needs to know that information, that kind of reporting is only being made so that efforts can be made to address and respond to the incident and to prevent it from happening again. And that report that's made obligates the student who's making that initial complaint, it does not obligate them in any way to participating in any kind of disciplinary proceeding against the person if they choose not to. So I think that some of that chilling effect concern can be addressed by sensitive and thoughtful administrators that are implementing that policy, you know, as well as awareness raising among the student body about why that's important that that happen and that the information that is shared is really limited in nature and on a limited basis.
We are talking to Aaron Basuvas. Aaron's a professor at Western New England University School of Law and director of its Center for Gender and Sexuality Studies. She's also the co-founder and co-contributor to the Title IX blog. Sexual assault stats can be really murky because so many have gone unreported. What's your most informed guess as to how many are reported and how many are unreported on college campuses?
Well, I mean, the statistic that is sort of most commonly floated is a reported one, that one in five college women are sexually assaulted in experience some form of sexual assault in college. But that's, again, just the reported statistics.
Doesn't tell us about how many are unreported, though.
Right. I don't have any way of gauging how many are unreported because they're unreported, but what we have seen is that in the wake of the Dear Colleague letter and in the wake of increased increased efforts to enforce Title IX and other sort of related laws in this area, that statistics about reported incidences of sexual assault on campus are on the rise, which I think most people don't believe is an uptick in sexual assault itself, but an uptick in reporting, which is likely due to students' increased confidence that their reports are going to be taken seriously. So I think as time goes by, we're going to have better statistics because the unreported incidences will be reduced. But again, it's not something that we can sort of have, you know, clear and concrete knowledge about because it's a problem that's lurking, you know, under the radar of statistics.
Aaron, what are some of the more common issues that you are seeing at other colleges and universities that are undergoing OCR investigations?
A various list here of common problems, common issues. We often see universities get in trouble under Title IX in this area for failing to take seriously their obligation to respond to reports that are made. And oftentimes that's due to a failure to recognize that a university's obligation to protect students' civil rights is something that's operating entirely separately and independent of the objectives of law enforcement. So if a college or university was to say to a student who has reported a sexual assault, well, we can't do anything unless the police file charges first, or we're not going to do anything because the police are investigating. That's a common problem that we've seen at various institutions. And the Dear Colleague letter and OCR is very clear on the fact that a university has to take steps to protect its students as an obligation under civil rights laws, as an obligation under Title IX. And that is something that is supposed to occur independently and potentially simultaneously with whatever efforts that law enforcement are making in that area. And that the outcome of a student disciplinary proceeding under Title IX should be in no way influenced by whatever outcome occurs in the law enforcement process. Mm. The two have different objectives. The two have different standards. The two have different concerns about safeguarding the rights of someone who's been accused because there are different things at stake for that person. So it's not appropriate to defer to law enforcement in this way, and that's a common problem we've seen. Other problems, common problems could be the length of time that it takes to actually conduct an investigation and to engage in a full, disciplinary proceeding from start to finish. And the reason why that is a common problem is because colleges and universities, to some extent, have an incentive to run out the clock on these claims.
Okay.
They can keep everybody, happy, or not happy, but somewhat, they can keep everybody enrolled, anyway, if they simply delay the outcome making the victim feel like, at least to some extent, things are happening, although moving slowly, and then never finally taking any kind of conclusory action, disciplinary action against the student who's been accused, until both students graduate, and then the problem just sort of resolves itself that way, right? It's sort of a passive response of running out the clock.
There also seems to be a subset of student-athlete cases here. How are these different? Are there patterns involved to the student-athlete cases that you can see?
Yeah, there have been a number of student-athlete cases for sure. There was just recently a lawsuit filed by a student at Boise State that involved an allegation of sexual assault by a student-athlete who, in the complaint, she claims the university didn't take seriously, likely due to an effort to protect the athletic department's reputation. And that is the sort of common thread among these kinds of cases that involve athletics. It's clear in the Dear Colleague letter. It's clear in how the courts have treated this, and in how OCR is treating these cases, that it's not appropriate for athletics to try to deter students who have been the victim of sexual assault allegedly by an athlete, to somehow try to handle the case in a, you know, internally or in some sort of informal way to avoid the student exercising her rights to either go to law enforcement or to use the university's otherwise applicable disciplinary process, because both of those two outcomes could result in some kind of negative publicity to the institution. So schools are getting in trouble for that kind of thing as well.
Well, one of the cases in question here at Michigan State involving the OCR investigation involves two MSU basketball players. The university, at least publicly, has seemed to rest on the fact that no criminal charges were brought in the case. University spokesman Jason Cody was quoted in the state news on March 9th saying, quote, MSU police, as they do with all cases, investigated thoroughly and as a result moved forward to the prosecutor with criminal proceedings, unquote. Now, charges were never brought. Does that mean the university couldn't have done anything else?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't mean that at all. There are lots of reasons why prosecutors might not move forward on a case, especially a case involving sexual assault. In the criminal justice system, the burden of proof on a prosecutor is exceedingly high, right? They have to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant in front of them committed whatever crime they're being charged with. And the reason for that is that what's at stake in the criminal justice system is the loss of liberty, which is one of the most important, you know, values that we have. So a prosecutor might say, well, it's a close case, right? It's a close call, or it's, even maybe substantial. There's lots of evidence in support of the fact that the student actually committed whatever they're being charged with, but not that overwhelmingly, like 99% sure kind of evidence. And so they might walk away from a case thinking, well, we're not going to win because the burden is so high. In civil rights, that criminal justice standard of proof does not apply, right? The OCR has explained to universities in the Dear Colleague letter and in the enforcement actions that it's taken since that the proper standard of proof for a university's disciplinary purposes is supposed to be the standard that applies in civil cases, which is a preponderance of evidence. Is it more likely than not? Are we overwhelmingly certain that this happened, but is it more likely than not that it happened?
Mm-hmm.
So that difference helps explain why universities' obligations are concurrent and why it's possible that prosecutors might decide not to go forward, but that a university would still be justified based on the evidence that it has in taking some sort of disciplinary action against a student that it finds has committed sexual assault.
Erin, you spoke of a rise in these investigations across the country. From your perspective, are we getting closer to a day when you may be less surprised that that actions taken against universities move from the theoretical to the actual. Are you preparing for that day when this moves from the theoretical to actually happening, to having funds withheld?
Oh, to having funds withheld? No, I don't think we're moving to the day of having funds withheld. I think that the Department of Education recognizes that that is a penalty that just ends up hurting students who attend a university, and isn't a punishment that's really directed at university officials themselves, who are the ones responsible for implementing Title IX laws. So I think instead, what's going to happen is that that threat of loss of funding is what is allowing OCR to handle these cases on a case by case basis. Getting colleges and universities to agree to do a better job in these cases. And it's not exactly a pleasant experience to be investigated by OCR and to continue to have to be monitored by the government going forward in your efforts to respond and address sexual assault. So I think that these investigations they've already demonstrated to be operating awareness raising and a deterrent among other universities to say, look, we don't want to be in that position. We don't want students to be filing complaints about us. And if for any reason we were the subject of a complaint, we would want to be able to demonstrate quickly to the agency that is overseeing this that we have our ducks in a row, that we have proper policies on the books, that we are already doing a good job in this area.
Okay.
So I think that that approach is going to ultimately prevail in sort of getting universities on board to what to many seems like a new idea of taking taking these claims seriously as a matter of students' civil rights.
All very interesting. Aaron Basuvis is the director of the Center for Gender and Sexuality Studies at Western New England University School of Law and is the co-founder and co-contributor to the Title IX blog, which tracks news and other developments around the federal statute that prohibits discrimination based on sex in federally funded schools. We want to thank Aaron Basuvis very much. It's Current State.